The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. This week, we are delighted to welcome back British cryptozoologist Richard Freeman to discuss real-life cases of monstrous animals. While some may believe that giants are solely in the realm of cryptozoology and mythology, there are thousands of reports of giant lizards, sharks, snakes and crocodiles from across the globe. We cover the tales of Gustav, the fearsome giant crocodile that lives in Burundi, Lolong and Potol from Asia, as well as Remy van der Laird's famous giant snake sighting from the 1950s. We look at many cases from across the globe. If you thought real monsters were left in the times of the dinosaurs or the Ice Age, perhaps it's time to think again. It's always nice to speak to Richard, and his two previous interviews on the show have been very popular, so I know you'll enjoy this one too. Before that, I'm delighted to announce that we've finally launched our Patreon. The first Patreon-only episode will be out this Thursday, as I'm joined by the marvellous Addie Lloyd to discuss cryptids, ghosts, and personal experiences. Each month, I'll be dropping at least two bonus shows for you, and all for the bargain price of $4 or £3.50 a month, and everybody who signs up will be entered into a monthly draw to win exclusive Patreon-only t-shirt and mug prize pack. The t-shirts and mugs have been designed by the marvellous Dan over at Greenwich Design. So thank you, Dan, and it's a real prize worth winning because you won't be able to buy these shirts anywhere else other than via Patreon. The link is on all our social media platforms, and I'll also put it in this week's show notes. So for less than a cup of coffee, you can have exclusive content and a chance to win some marvellous prizes every month. A big thank you to everybody who's already signed up due to it dropping on social media yesterday. So thank you. It's greatly appreciated. You can also subscribe to Mysteries and Monsters on our YouTube channel. Find us on Facebook under Mysteries and Monsters. And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram under Mystery Monsters. Don't forget, our merchandise is also available through Redbubble, so if you need yourself a nice new coffee mug to show your support, then Redbubble's the place to find your Mysteries and Monsters mugs. Okay, so let's join Richard Freeman on the trail of some very real and frankly terrifying monstrous animals. This week, we're delighted to welcome back British cryptozoologist Richard Freeman to the show as we delve into the world of giant animals. Richard, welcome back. How are we?
Fine, thanks. Fine. Surviving this sort of dystopian science fiction novel that we're all sort of finding ourselves living in.
Yes, yes. This was not how I expected Mad Max 2 to turn out, Richard.
No, it's not. It reminds me of the, if you're old enough to remember all the way back, it reminds me of the Silurian plague in Doctor Who.
Yes.
The Silurians release the plague and that the streets are empty and thousands of people are dying. They predicted fracking in the same year as well.
Yeah. It is a bit strange that, you know, we've had notable stories and films over the years where we've had this kind of end of the world dystopian crisis, and to be fair, it doesn't seem to match many of them, really. It's a bit odd.
Yeah, well we haven't had in fiction, as far as I know, there's been no lunatics blaming the virus and its effects from radiation from mobile phone masts.
Yes, well,
sadly, the plot line was as lunatic as that.
Sadly, it's one of those things. I think whenever something like this is, I just find it incredible that people leap to such wild speculation when a basic knowledge of virology and the history of pandemics shows you that this is not unusual. And it, sadly, it's been overdue for a fair few years. You know, people have been going on about there's a big pandemic coming, there's a big pandemic coming, and people have just gone, yeah, okay, no problems. And then it happens, and everybody goes, oh, it's 5G. What?
Yeah, well, people would rather ignore virologists and scientists and immunologists, and they'd rather believe someone who believes in shape-shifting lizards, thinks he's the son of God, and says that New Zealand was going to vanish in 1997.
Yeah, yeah. 3G caused cancer as well, like, didn't it?
Yeah. It's that mindset. It's almost like medieval peasants, isn't it?
It is. It's like witchcraft, isn't it?
Yeah.
Burning flaming torches, mobs wandering the streets. Yeah, it's a good job we don't live in a castle, Richard. They'd be banging on our door, mate. So, as I touched on in the introduction, we're going to dive into the world of giant animals today, and obviously over the years, especially in the modern era, numerous claims have been made, and when we were talking about this, Richard, I had a little chuckle to myself because I remembered a Facebook conversation that myself, you, Mike Playfair and Dr. Carl Schuker were involved in, where we were being lectured by a lady who had seen a Discovery documentary about Megalodon and therefore was convinced that they were real, and she'd read a book on Bigfoot, so she knew about cryptozoology.
Yes, that was the fake one on Animal Planet, wasn't it? Yeah. Which was, it's very disingenuous of them there.
Yes.
Because how much would that cost to have produced? About that cost about $1 million to produce.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's not as much as a cheap straight to video film. Now, that $1 million could have been put into real research.
Yeah.
For real cryptids. There's zero evidence that Megalodons survived.
Yeah.
If it has, we would have found whales with great chunks taken out of them. Yeah. There's been attacks on boats and things like that.
Yeah.
It evolved to prey on early, very slow-moving whales, Megalodon. And when the Isthmus of Panama that connects North America to Central and South America, when that formed, it changed the way the ocean currents flow.
Mm.
It became cooler, and it really did for Megalodon, that and the evolution of faster-moving whales and competition from predatory whales.
Mm.
When you look at the handful of supposed Megalodon sightings, the descriptions are all of quite clearly of whale sharks.
Mm.
The famous Zane Grey one. Yeah. It's a perfect description of a whale shark.
Yeah.
Down to the patination and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But, it does seem to be one that a lot of people want to be there, Richard, despite that, you know, we've got evidence of giant animals in a variety of species across the world, and you know, and as I was saying at the time when we were involved in this very strange conversation with someone, you know, Deep Blue's the biggest one we found as a shark. You know, she's the largest one on record, and she was pregnant. Now, I'm not saying that I don't think that there's a possibility there might be a slightly larger shark out there, and if it is, it's probably a great white that might get somewhere near 30 feet. But, you know, an 80-foot shark swimming about that we've no evidence for, no chance.
No. Back in 1987, there were two great whites caught, and they were caught within, you know, within months of each other. Mm. One was off Kangaroo Island, in off the coast of South Australia, and the other one was off the coast of Malta, and they were both, you know, within weeks of each other in 1987. And they were both around 23 feet long. They were both measured at 23 feet. And that's the biggest we know about. And there are claims of larger ones. Mm. There are claims of big ones. There's a famous shark called Big Ben off Port Fairy in South Australia in the 60s and 50s, 50s and 60s. Mm. Supposed to be an exceptionally big shark. And bigger than the ones that we've just mentioned. Mm. But there's an area, a place called Lady Julia Percy Island. Great name for an island, that Lady, yes. Julia Percy Island. And there's colonies of sea lions around there. But there's a guy called Reuben Kelly, who's a fisherman. He's passed away now. But he used to go fishing for snapper off there. And according to him and his crew, in the mid-1950s, their boat was attacked by a shark that he estimated to be 25 feet long, mm-hmm. which is the same size as the model one they used in Jaws. It grabbed a hold of the boat and was shaking the boat. Mm. So it's liable that some great whites do get bigger than the 23 mark, mm-hmm. 23 foot mark. But what interests me is these known animals, they're not unknown animals, mm-hmm. but ones that grow, you know, freakishly big, very much bigger than and what it says in the textbooks. There's this weird mindset that scientists think that the biggest individual that they have measured represents the biggest size for that particular species, which is a very, very dumb thing to think, that this particular specimen, because it's just the biggest one you use measure, it's the biggest one in the world. Mm. Out of a whole, you know, worldwide population. Now, the interesting thing about these stories of very big animals is they tend to be, not exclusively, but mostly, they tend to be cold-blooded animals. Mm. So reptiles, fish, squid, things like that. Mm. And the stuff I've looked into most are stories of giant crocodiles, so I thought I'd start off with those.
Yes.
Now, before we get into giant crocodiles, let's just pause a moment and take a look at how formidable an average-sized crocodile is. If you take the Nile crocodile, average size about 14, 15 feet, an average-sized Nile crocodile will kill a leopard, it will kill a lion, it will kill a giraffe, it will kill a one-ton water buffalo, it will kill a bull shark. Saltwater crocodile, similar average size. Mm. They kill tigers, they kill leopards, they kill gaur, the biggest type of wild cow in the world. Mm. They take down sharks with another. Black caiman in South America, average size about 14 foot again. They take down jaguars. I mean, we've all seen lots of film of jaguars killing small caiman, not the respectable caiman, which is about 6 foot long. Mm. Black caiman are enormous. Mm. That's a whole different cattle are fish altogether than a spectacle caiman, with immensely powerful jaws. They take down jaguars. Yeah. There's some film on YouTube of one ripping the living hell out of a jaguar. So these are average size ones. Now, if average size ones can do that, think about the power of big ones. There's a case in the East Alligator River in 1987 of a Toyota utility truck crossing this river, and it's only about a meter deep. Halfway across, they met a average-sized Nile saltwater crocodile, which lashed out with its tail, smashing the truck, and it flipped it over onto its side like it was a toy. The national park rangers had to come and rescue these people in their motorboats. And there was another case from Prince Charlotte Bay in June 2000, where a saltwater crocodile tried to mate with a seaplane. It mistook a seaplane for another crocodile and ended up sinking the whole plane. Wow. So that's the strength of your average croc. So the largest one that's generally accepted by experts was 28 feet 4 inches for a saltwater crocodile that was shot on the MacArthur bank of the Norman River in Queensland in 1957 by a woman called Mrs. Chris Palofsky. The body was too big to move, but it was photographed, but sadly the photograph was destroyed in a house fire. But her husband was a recognised expert on crocodiles. He'd made some of the first crocodile farms in the country, and he measured the specimen. And he'd measured thousands of others, and this was by far the biggest. And he'd never measured one over 18 feet, but this one was over 28 feet long. And he was a very well-respected crocodile expert. But there's been other cases of very, very big saltwater crocodiles as well, from Australia and from Asia. One of the most famous was, again in the 1950s, was seen by a rubber plantation owner. His name was James Montgomery. Montgomery's plantation was near the Sagama River in northern Borneo. And the local tribe, the Saluka people, told him about this monster that lived down the river, and they thought it was the father of the devil. And when they saw it, they would throw silver coins in the water to appease it. Montgomery thought he'd investigate and see if there's any truth to this. So he went down the river looking for this huge monster, whatever it was. He thought it was just folklore. And he saw this titanic crocodile hauled out onto a sandbank, and it filled the whole bank and had the end of its tail in the water. And he realised that his rifle would be like a pop gun against something like that. So he thought, you know, discretion, the better part of valour. He went back up the river, came back at a later date, and measured the sandbank that the creature was on. And the sandbank was 30 feet, so he reckoned with part of its tail in the water, this thing would have been 10 metres, 33 feet. Now, something like that is going to be weighing well over 3 tons, something like 3.5 tons, as much as a rhino or a hippo.
It's remarkable, because I think it's one of those things, because if you are a lover of B-movies as I am, Richard, I have grown up my entire life seeing all kinds of creatures that reach gargantuan proportions and terrorize people until they somehow find it. But the world of the crocodilian is one of those where it's essentially, I don't think you need to exaggerate the potential of these creatures, because, you know, as you touched on there, even an average size one is a hell of a creature.
Anything that can kill a tiger in a scrap or a lion is something you've got to fear. And they have a bite, something like 10,000 newtons when they bite down, and that bite pressure is something like 5 times more powerful than a great white shark. They've got the most powerful bite, a big crocodile has the most powerful bite of any animal, and they'll crunch through turtle shells. I've seen metal boats that look like they've been shot by machine guns. And what it is the tooth holes when a big croc has chomped down. on these things. I mean, there's another one in a wildlife sanctuary in eastern India, in Orissa, that's supposed to be 23 feet. There's one in that Malcolm Douglas, a filmmaker and the owner of Broome Crocodile Park in Australia, encountered one in a river in northern Australia in 1987. And this is what he said. He said, "We call him Hippo. He dwarfs everything I've ever seen. Compared to the 16-foot, 4-inch croc we did catch, he made it look like a 12-footer. Once we had him alongside a net, the corks were 3 feet apart and his length covered 8 corks along the net, maybe a little bit more. So that makes him at least 25 feet long."
Good, dear me. I mean, obviously, I think the one guy that I think is probably the most well known of these gargantuan crocodilians is the marvellously named Gustav, who is, I believe, he's a Nile crocodile that lives in the Burundi, in Central Africa, Richard. Now,
like Tanganyika.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know Gustav is alleged to be the most prolific man-eating crocodile anybody's ever recorded, if we are to believe what. And there's no reason to disprove it, because he's been sighted on a few occasions and sent people's blood cold, Richard, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's reckoned to be about 60 years old, and I think he's killed about 300 people. Someone tried to shoot him with a machine gun once, and all it did was put a couple of dents in his armour. You'll see, when people talk about it, they'll say they reckon he's about 20 feet long, but I've seen film of him next to an adult hippo. He's lying next to an adult hippo, and he looks bigger than that to me. He looks more in the region of 23 to 25 feet. And a park ranger on Lake Tanganyika said he saw Gustav tear the throat out of a full-grown hippo and kill it.
There, I mean, that's some doing, Richard.
It does. It does take some doing. I mean, a white rhinoceros could probably gore a hippo to death, or an elephant, but there's not much else that would stand to one.
Absolutely. I mean, he is a remarkable character as well, because he is alleged, you know, I'm not trying to create some kind of supernatural mystery about this, because at the end of the day, we are talking about a living, breathing, killing machine. And his reputation is worldwide. Now, as far as I'm aware, he doesn't seem to be seen as often as he used to do. Now, when was the last time he was recorded, Richard?
I think it was about 5 years ago, the last sighting. So he might have died of old age, or he might have just become a bit more elusive with all the people poking around looking for him.
There's
a theory that, you know, all the conflict there is what turned him into a man-eater, because he was feeding on human corpses. And he started to feed on live humans. But he's not the only giant Nile crocodile reported. There's a renowned wildlife photographer, Cherry Kitt, and he lived from, he was born in 1871, died in 1940. He's one of the first wildlife filmmakers and photographers. He back in the 20s and 30s, he would go to Africa and make some of these first wildlife films. And in one book, called Land of a Lion, he talks about seeing one of these huge creatures on the Semaliki River in Uganda. And he said there's this massive crocodile lying amongst all these other average-sized crocodiles. And he reckoned, measuring it against the other ones, it was a good 27 feet. And Uganda seems to be a hot spot, or did seem to be a hot spot for these creatures. And there are other stories from Uganda. There was a Captain Riddick that said that he'd shot a massive saltwater crocodile at Lake Kyoga in Uganda, also in Uganda, and he reckoned, this is in 1903, and he measured it at something like 24 feet, but part of the tail was missing, maybe bitten off by another even bigger crocodile.
Yeah, I'm going to say, it's bad enough finding that guy and then thinking, well, hang on, something's been big enough to have a go at him.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. And the only thing that would do that is another bigger crocodile. But it probably happened when he was a lot smaller.
Yes, let's hope.
When he was an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you touched on there, I believe the official record holder for the largest crocodile recorded is Lolong. Now, I saw
largest in captivity.
Yeah,
in captivity.
I saw the wonderful documentary a few years ago about the attempt and successful capture of Lolong, and the one thing that struck me about this documentary was that when all these locals, I think it was in a town called Buwan in the Philippines, I think is where he hung around, and then when they caught him, they were like, yeah, brilliant, are you going to get the other one that's bigger? And I was like, what? Pardon?
Yes, yeah. It was caught, it's a place called Agusan Marsh in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And it started with there were a lot of floating villages around there. There were two girls coming home in a canoe. This massive crocodile flipped the canoe and bit one girl's head off, and a fisherman managed to save the other girl. And then there were all these other killings of people around Agusan Marsh. And they caught this big crocodile after a lot of effort with baited, I think they used dead monkeys as bait, and they captured it and took it to a crocodile farm. They called it Lolong, and they measured it to just over 20 feet. But everyone who'd seen this bigger crocodile said, that's not it. And they call this bigger crocodile Potol, which means slasher.
Yeah.
And the guy that saw it kill the girl said, that's not it. It was bigger than that, and it was much darker green.
Yeah.
And another guy said it swam up next to his house, and he's got like this jetty on the floating house, and he measured it out afterwards, and he said it was 30 feet. And it's been measured against the boats they use there, and they say it's 30 feet. But it can send the whole area into a panic. I mean, when this initial killing happened, there was one floating village that just pulled everything up and just moved to another part of the lake.
Yeah.
So he's still out there. And it's interesting that some of these real outsized specimens, they get a sort of mystique about them.
Mm.
They become like almost legendary beast.
Mm.
And Potol has this, what we call it, this mystique about him. He's looked on in complete awe and fear.
Yeah.
But a lot of them have been seen from planes as well, and people have been going over areas in plains, and they've seen huge crocodiles in rivers. For instance, there's a pilot who's an expert in Aboriginal rock art, and he's also an author called Percy Therese. He was flying over the Cape York Peninsula in Australia with a bunch of tourists, and he says, I was flying low over an estuarine area with the tide out, and I came around a corner at 100 feet, so that is quite close to the ground, it's not way, way up. And there was the crocodile of all crocodiles. It looked as if you couldn't reach across its back with spread arms. In my opinion, he was more than 30 feet long. And that's not the only one he saw. Back in the 50s, he was flying an aerial ambulance along the western coast, and he saw this big log with this enormous crocodile nearby. And he took another swoop round to get a closer look, and he reckoned that one was 24 feet. There's another guy called Lloyd Griggs, saw a 25-foot-1 into a river running into Princess Charlotte Bay, and it left a slide mark that was 5 feet 6 inches wide, and he reckoned that was 25 feet. But then, as well as these ones, I mean, 25 to 30-foot crocs is big enough. Then you get these really, really freakishly, reports of freakishly gigantic ones, which really leave you scratching your head. And there was this one such encounter happened in the Gulf of Bengal in 1860. There's a crew and the passengers for the ship Nemesis observed one of these giant crocodiles at close range. And one of the witnesses was a guy called W.H. Marshall, and he described it in a book called 4 Years in Burma. And this is what he said. As the Nemesis was proceeding onwards towards our destination, our attention was directed to an alligator of enormous length. Now, back then, they used crocodile and alligator, you know, a bit loosely. So sometimes they call an alligator a crocodile, sometimes they call a crocodile an alligator. Where this was, it would have been a saltwater crocodile. Alligators are only found in China and North America, and you've got the Caymans down in South America. And funnily enough, alligators don't seem to reach the great lengths that crocodiles do. There are very few, if any, stories of monster alligators, but there are many, many of crocodiles.
Yes.
Anyway, he says, an alligator of enormous length, which was swimming alongside the along against the tide, here very strong, at a rate that was perfectly astonishing. I never beheld such a monster. It paused within a very short distance from us, its head and nearly half of its body out of the water. I should think that it could not have been less than 5 and 40 feet long, measuring it from its head to the extremity of its tail. I am confident that it was travelling at a rate of at least 30 miles an hour. So that's something of almost prehistoric prehistoric dimensions.
Yeah.
But there's similar stories out of Africa as well. In the late 19th century, there's a Belgian explorer called John Reinhardt Werner. And he reported two encounters with monstrously large crocodiles. And the people in the Congo call this thing Mahamba, the Lord of the Jungle, this giant crocodile. And he was travelling down the Congo on a 42-foot steam launch called the Aja, and he stopped at a sandbank to shoot some ducks for food, and he pursued one of them over a low ridge, and this is what he saw. He says, the biggest crocodile I have ever seen, comparing him to the Aja, which lay in deep water some 300 yards off, I reckoned him to be quite 50 feet long, whilst the centre of the sawback ridge must have been some 4 feet off the ground where his belly rested. And he took another shot at these ducks, and the thing made off into deeper water. Around 3 days later, he said he saw another vast specimen. The Aja had embedded itself in a sandbank as it headed upriver, and something was causing a commotion underneath it. And he said, I saw an enormous crocodile, longer, I'm certain, than the Aja, rush across the bank and tumble into the deep water beyond. I've never seen such a large crocodile move so fast, and I had no time to get a shot at him. He must have heard us coming and was trying to make for deep water on our side of the bank when we ran into him and hammered him into the sand. We struck him, moving at a rate of 4 miles an hour, but during the short time of his view, I could not see that he bore any marks of our collision. Now, so what do we make of those? Now, if you look at the weight and size of an animal, a 25-foot crocodile, you know, is going to be weighing, a conservative estimate, is going to be weighing at least 2 tons. Which, if you scale that up, a specimen of 50 feet weighing in the region of 15 tons.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you double the dimension of an animal, you don't just, it's not twice as heavy, because you've got twice the length, twice the width, twice the breadth, so it's much heavier. You see what I mean? It's
absolutely
like a cube.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's essentially we're in the realm of dinosaurs, aren't we, Richard, at that size?
Yeah. Yeah. But the one thing that makes me scratch my head about that, as the first one he thought was 45 feet long. He said its body was 4 feet thick, which doesn't sound very thick for an animal that big. A 4 foot thick crocodile would be maybe 20 feet. So perhaps he was either misinterpreting the length or misinterpreting the width.
I mean it is strange, and I've always, like you say, I've come across these occasional stories, and they really are baffling, because they are such a leap from what other people have said. You know, they're around 30 feet, you know, most of the older witness accounts, Richard, and to essentially almost double the size of an enormous creature anyway, you know. I remember as a few years ago, I went to Busch Gardens, and I think they've got a Nile crocodile there. And he was only about 16 foot, I think. And he was enormous. He was absolutely enormous. It was jaw-dropping. And that, essentially, was an average specimen.
Yeah.
I couldn't even contemplate something twice as large, never mind three times.
But we do know that they get to a very advanced age, some of them. And there's a male Nile crocodile, a man-eater from the Okavango Delta in Botswana, and he was captured alive by an elephant hunter in 1903. And he was named Henry after the man that captured him. And he resides in Croc World Conservation Centre in Scottsburg. In Natal. He weighs 1,100 pounds and measures close to 16 feet in length, and fathered at least 700 offspring. And he's got a harem of six females with him. and he's been in captivity for 115 years.
Yeah.
And he was an adult when he was caught, so he's probably at least 130 years old.
Yeah.
In Australia Zoo, Steve Irwin's place, they've got a freshwater crocodile called Mr. Freshy, and he died in 2010, and he was 140. So they can reach very advanced ages, and they continue growing throughout their lives. And this is the thing about cold-blooded animals. They continue to grow throughout their lives. A crocodile, from when it's a hatchling to when it's up to about 6 or 7 feet, it grows about a foot a year, but then the growth rate slows down.
Yeah.
So there must be something else to it other than extreme old age. And it seems that protein intake may have something to do with them getting such a large size. In the early 70s, some work was done in this with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, and they made some interesting discoveries relating to diet and growth rate in the American alligator. They've got two groups of juvenile alligators that were reared on different diets. One was fed on coypu, you know, the big South American rodents, and the other was fed on fish. And they found that the nutritional analysis showed that the coypu contained 14.9% crude protein, 2.1% crude fat, and 0.1% crude fiber, and 45% moisture. Fish, on the other hand, only contained 9.9% protein, 4% fat, 1% fiber, and 60.6% moisture. So there's much more moisture in the fish. Specimens fed on the coypu grew 20% larger than the ones fed on fish over a period of 3 years. And they were more active and more aggressive. So it seems that diet has something to do with it, but also lack of disturbance. Most of these really big crocodiles are in places where there's not much human disturbance. They're in these very remote areas, because we know that human disturbance can cause stress, which slows the growth rate down. So if you think of those remote areas where there are lots of protein rich food that's plentiful all year round, because in some areas crocodiles estivate, they go into a sort of pseudo hibernation when they sort of lower their metabolism for a while because of seasonal food source shortages. So if there's an area where there's protein-rich prey all year round, you've got a population of naturally very large crocodiles. Occasionally, they're going to throw up a freak. Mm. They're going to throw up this genetic quirk where you get immensely big animals.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is the cause of it.
Yeah. Would you say that, you know, obviously those examples you've given, they seem to be a creature that flourishes in captivity to be able to, you know, reach those ages, Richard? Is that because, you know, at the end of the day, the world of crocodiles and alligators is not a nice place to be? They are extremely aggressive, territorial creatures.
Well, in the breeding season they are. Outside of the breeding season, they get on surprisingly well. They're very social. Nile crocodiles have been seen to form walls in the water, natural dams, by climbing on each other's backs to corral fish. And they'll cooperate like this, getting on each other's backs to corral fish, making like a living wall to get hold of the fish. When they feed, I think they're feeding on a big animal like a dead hippo or something, or a zebra. Some of them will anchor the corpse, while others will swim in, bite, do the old death roll and rip chunks off. And then they'll hold on while the others take a turn, so everybody gets a turn. So outside of the breeding season, they're very surprisingly social animals. In the breeding season, they'll fight, and sometimes they'll fight to the death.
Yes.
So I think it's that hunting and fighting. They don't have to do that in captivity. Mm. They get fed. All they have to do is lie around, basically. And I think that's why they reach such advanced ages. Yeah. But then, you know, there are reports of wild crocodiles living for a very long age as well. Mm. I mean, there was one that Cherry Keaton, who we mentioned earlier, he made a film called Tembe, and he featured a Nile crocodile that lived in the Murchison Gulf Lake, Murchison Gulf in Lake Victoria. And the natives fed her fish. She was sort of semi-tame. This was back in the 1920s, and she was an adult then. And she was supposed to have been living in the area since the 19th century, and the people told him she was used way back when, you know, as a sort of totem animal, way back when. They knew this crocodile wouldn't attack them, and they fed it fish.
Yeah.
From the 19th century all the way up to the time that in the 1920s that Cherry Keaton filmed her, and she never attacked anybody in those days. But then there's some reports that that she'd also been used as an executioner by the Ugandan kings back in the days when they were kings there, and that she wasn't quite as tame as everybody thought, and when she wasn't being fed fish, she was the royal executioner, and they'd put people that the king didn't like would be dragged down to this lake, and this crocodile would kill them, which would make her very old indeed, because she was being used as an executioner. You know, in the time of the Ugandan kings, when she was being filmed in the 1920s.
Yeah. I mean...
So the Ugandan kings was pre-1894.
Yeah.
So this was a very old animal.
Yeah. I mean, I always... There is a sharp intake of breath, Richard, whenever I hear anybody describe a crocodile or an alligator as tame or semi-tame, because there is a level of intelligence in that creature that I suspect, you know, I know people who keep snakes and very large snakes, and they have a very symbiotic relationship, and they seem to appreciate, you know, the fact that they're warm and they feed them, I think tends to help. But, you know, lizards and things like that, you can build a relationship up with certain, you know, most creatures. I am often astounded when I see some person who claims to have a pet crocodile or a pet alligator.
Well, I've worked with crocs and gators, and particularly the gators, particularly, are very calm. I never got bitten by any of them. I never had any problems with them. But they were well fed, and they were used to me. But you never take your eye off them.
Yeah.
because they can just turn. I mean, there's a guy not so long ago had an arm ripped off by a saltwater croc in a crocodile farm in Thailand.
Mm. Yep.
So it's, I had a python, I had a Burmese python for a number of years who was completely tame. You know, you could handle him, and then one day he just turned.
Yeah.
Nothing had happened to him. You know, he hadn't been mishandled, he wasn't hungry, he just turned one day and became ultra aggressive. And the only thing I can think it was is that he became sexually mature.
Mm.
He was a male, and the males, they're not as big as the females. With crocodiles, the males are very much bigger than the females. Mm. With snakes, it's the females that are bigger. But the males are more aggressive with pythons for some reason. Which segues nicely into the next thing I want to talk about, which is monstrous snakes. Once again, we've got cold-blooded animals that grow very, very big. There's a guy called Charles Gould who, 1884, he wrote this book called Mythical Monsters, which is all about how things like dragons and unicorns and sea serpents are all probably based on real animals. Mm. And it's still available today as a reprint. And it was written long after Origin of Species. And it's very, very good. And there's one bit where he tells us of his belief that constricting snakes once grew far beyond their modern dimensions. And he says, I fancy that at the present day, the numbers, magnitude and terrifying nature of serpents but feebly represents the power which they asserted in the early days of man's existence, or the terror which they then inspired. Now, it's these big, constricting snakes that we're looking at here. So, we mentioned before, I think the last time I was on, Remy van Leyden, who's a Belgian fighter pilot, a decorated fighter pilot in World War II. And after the war, he became a charter pilot, and he was in Katanga in a region of Zaire in 1959, and he was flying across a clearing in the jungle, and he saw this immense snake that he said came up out of a hole. And he said it was dark green on top with a paler colour underneath. And as he went by, it reared itself up and struck at the helicopter because he was quite low. And he estimated it to be 50 feet long, and it reared up 10 feet to strike at the helicopter. And he said he had this horse-like head, and he thought the head was about 3 feet long and about 2 feet wide. And he took a second pass over this area so a photograph could be taken, and there's a snake in this photograph that does look tremendously big and bulky, but the trouble is there's very little to measure it by. There's very little scale on it. Some people said they've seen termite mounds. There's a particularly odd type of termite mound in South America, in Africa, and it has a certain shape. It's this sort of mushroom type shape, and it only gets that shape when it's about 6 feet tall. And they reckon that by measuring it against that, he was right. Van Leyden was right, and it was at least 50 feet long, this snake. But I can't make them out, having looked at the photograph myself, but some people have said that. But there are stories of giant snakes in Africa as well. And one comes from this remarkable woman called Mary Kingsley. And she was the niece of Charles Kingsley, who wrote The Water Baby. Mm. And she had led this sheltered life in Victorian England. And she decided she was bored at the age of 30, and she wanted to explore Africa. So this is at a time when women were meant to stay at home. So she just left to explore Western Central Africa. And she collected specimens for the British Museum. And she recorded her adventures in a book called Travels in West Africa. Hmm. And she tells of hearing about this outsized python. And this is what she says, and it's very pertinent. The largest crocodile I have ever measured was 22 feet, 3 inches. The largest gorilla, 5 feet, 7 inches. I'm assured by the missionaries at Calabar, there was a python brought into Creek Town in the Reverend Mr. Goldie's time that extended the whole length of the Creek Town Mission House veranda and to spare. The python must have been over 40 feet. I have not a shadow of a doubt it was. Stay-at-home people will always discredit great measurements, but experienced bushmen do not. And after all, if it amuses the stay-at-homes to do so, then by all means let them. They will have dull lives of it, and it doesn't hurt you, for you know how exceedingly difficult it is to preserve really big things to bring home, and how, half of the time, they fall into hands of people who would not bother their heads to preserve them in a rotting climate like West Africa. The largest python skin I ever measured was a damaged one, which was 26 feet. Mm. So I think she's talking sense there, that all these people in their ivory towers mm-hmm. never get out into the field, that never explore themselves, and they will say, oh, it couldn't have possibly been that big. You must have been exaggerating. Well, they weren't there to measure it.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, you only have to look, Richard, at how pythons are flourishing in Florida. In just 30 years, I think the largest one they caught was last year, which was just under 18 feet. I think that's the largest they've caught so far there. You know,
They're there to stay now. Oh, we won't get rid of them.
Tragically, it would seem. And you know, that's an alien creature that has essentially taken over that state in 30 years. So I am not at all surprised when I hear stories of giant pythons from the heart of Africa, because, you know, this is the middle of nowhere. These creatures, if they have the tenacity and the ability and the availability of food, I would not be surprised to hear hundreds of these creatures are that large.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Yeah, I know, but in Asia, you've got the reticulated python.
Mm.
That's officially the longest snake ever caught. Was one that was 33 feet long that was taken in 1912 on the island of the Celebes. But once again, like all these things, there are larger ones. I mean, the explorer Francis Legutte claimed to have encountered a 50-foot long one on Java, and another one of a similar size was reported in the North China Daily News in November the 10th, 1880. Tells of a Western hunter who came across a remote hut in the jungle in the Malayan Peninsula. On the roof was a gigantic python skin. Mm. And he started talking to the men in the hut of where it came from. And this is what he wrote, that's what the guy told him. The Malay was awakened one night by his wife's screams. Investigating, he found to his horror an immense snake had drawn the poor woman's whole arm into its maw and was in the process of swallowing her. The plucky fellow seized two bags and stuffed them into the corners of the giant reptile's mouth, just thus forcing them to open wider. The released snake turned upon the man, whipping its coils about him. Fortunately for the Malay, his arms were free, and he grabbed his parang, similar to a machete, and hacked at the vasty serpent. The snake unwound and slithered through an opening in the hut. Both the man and the hut were covered in blood. Come the morning, he followed the python's trail to a patch of plantain palms. In its death throes, the beast had smashed the trees and uprooted them. In the midst of the destruction lay the offending creature, dead. He had been offered $60 from some Chinese who had travelled long distances to buy pieces of the monster's flesh due to its medicinal properties. Yeah, sounds familiar, doesn't it? They also offered him $6 for the skin. This he kept, however. The trophy, as a trophy of the ordeal, the skin was between 7 and 8 fathoms. That's 50 to 56 feet.
Mm.
There's another similar story in the book, A Pictorial Museum of Animated Nature, which was a Victorian nature book, which runs like this. The captain of a country ship, whilst passing the Sundarbans, which is an area of mangroves in northern India and Bangladesh, famously wild, sent a boat into one of the creeks to obtain some fresh fruits, which are cultivated by the few miserable inhabitants of this inhospitable region. Having reached the shore, the crew moored the boat under a bank and left one of their party to take care of her. During their absence, the Lascar, who remained in charge of the boat, overcome by the heat, lay down under the sheets and fell asleep. Whilst he was in this happy state of unconsciousness, an enormous boa. Now, once again, we use forget the word boa and python used interchangeably. In fact, boas and pythons are not that closely related. Boas give birth to live young fruit, for example, and pythons lay eggs. But it's one of those Victorian things, well, early Victorian things, where they're often called the jaguar in South America. They call it a tiger, for instance. Mm. They use the wrong names, I think. An enormous boa emerged from the jungle, reached the boat, and had already caught its huge body around the sleeper and was in the very act of crushing him to death when his companions fortunately returned at this auspicious moment. Attacking the monster, they severed a portion of its tail, which so disabled it that it no longer retained the power of doing any mischief. The snake was then easily dispatched and was found to measure, as stated, 62 feet and some inches in length.
No thanks. Goodness me. That's terrifying.
It is. If a chewed muzzle with fangs and teeth at one end, I wouldn't fancy taking on one of these things just armed with a machete. To be honest.
No. I'd be considering just how much I liked the person it had hold of, I think. I'm sad to say. No, you never know. Goodness. I mean, when something like that happens, Richard, I don't think anybody knows how they'd react, really. It's incredible.
I mean, the biggest one I've ever seen was a Burmese python that was about 23 feet.
Yeah.
That's in captivity. You know, and that could easily squeeze the life out of you and swallow you.
Yeah. But go on, sorry, Richard.
There's a bit of an old sequence of film on YouTube you can find of a reticulated python that looks to be about 25 feet long fighting a tiger.
Mm.
And the tiger is biting at it and shaking it about, and the snake just whips around this tiger and he's got it.
Mm.
And it damn near kills the tiger, and the tiger just manages to shake free and lope off.
Mm.
But it was bloody lucky.
Yeesh.
If it had got another couple of coils around it, that would have been, you know, yeah, sayonara pussycat.
Absolutely. I mean, there are notable and numerous stories of, sadly, people being taken by extremely large snakes, especially in Asia. I'm trying to think. It's a few years ago, but there was a very well-documented case of someone that was discovered with their legs hanging out of one.
Yeah, there was a Chinese jeweller in Malaya that disappeared, and they found him half swallowed by a reticulated python of about 23 feet. In recent years, there's been a couple of victims of pythons in that range, you know, about the 23 to 25 feet range, reticulated pythons that have swallowed people. Moving down into Australia, you get the amethystine python, which is almost as large. Charles Gould, again, was told by his acquaintance G.R. Moffat that the Aborigines on the lower Murray River between Swan Hill and Darlington Junction knew of a giant black serpent that lived in the Mallee scrub that was said to be 40 feet long and of huge girth, but very, very swift. Fortunately, it was said it produced a vile stench that warned of its approach.
Mm.
And a white man, the son of Mr. Peter Beveridge of Swan Hill, had seen the beast around 1857. Mr. Henry Liddell resident of the Darling River was told of identical stories by stock riders and ration carriers. There were snakes of this size that were supposed to be not uncommon between Wentworth and Pooncara in the 1870s. But the mother of all of these giant Australian snakes was reported back in 1822 by two men in the front branch of a magistrate in Liverpool near Sydney. The two men told people that 2 kilometres outside of the town they'd come across a snake 47 feet long and 3 times as thick as a human. Thinking it was dead, one of the pair unwisely threw a rock at it. To their horror, it was very much still alive and rose 5 feet off the ground. The magistrates seemed to believe them as a posse rode out of the town and ventured to the location of the encounter, but found only a large track bearing the impression of scales.
I mean, why, why would you throw a rock at it, Richard, regardless? I wouldn't want to take the chance.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just asking for trouble.
The biggest Alasistine python ever measured was about 28 feet, so they do get bloody big. But the daddy of them all of the giant snakes, you have to go to South America. It's a legendary giant anaconda, of which there have been so many sightings going back, to the 18th century of these gigantic snakes. A team of prospectors in 1944 encountered one in Colombia, and they were led by a geologist called Roberto Lamont, and the men shot the snake and measured it at 37 feet 6 inches. The group left the creature lying there, went to have their lunch, intended to come back and photograph it and skin it, but when they come back, they found it had gone and the bullets had just stunned it and it absconded in their absence. Another guy, Frederico Medan, who's a Colombian herpetologist, that's what he studies reptiles, said that he saw an anaconda he estimated to be between 30 and 40 feet long, and he obtained another report of a 34-foot long one.
Yeah.
And they just keep coming, these reports. The most famous is Colonel Percy Fawcett's one. He's supposed to have shot one that was over 62 feet long, but I don't believe his report, simply because he says that the girth of it was only a foot. Now, a 62-foot anaconda, that is going to be well over a metre thick. Well over a metre thick. The actual bones, without any flesh on them, would be bigger than 12 inches. So that's why I don't believe his particular story. But there are plenty of other stories. For example, General Candido Marino de Silva Rondon, who lent his name to the Rondonia area of Brazil, saw a specimen killed by Indians that he measured at 38 feet long. And there are several in this size bracket that can't easily be dismissed. A 34-foot anaconda was shot by Vincent Roth, the director of the National Museum in British Guiana, and another naturalist, R. Moll, who made very important contributions about the knowledge of the wildlife of Trinidad, reported a 33-foot one in Trinidad in 1924, and Dr. F. Medham of the University of Columbia saw a 33-foot 8-inch specimen killed on the Guadalari River. So these are not just laymen; these are scientists that have been measuring these huge snakes. But there are reports, quite credible reports, of even larger ones. For instance, F.W. de Graaf, who was a American explorer, he spent something like 7 years in South America. He lived there for 7 years. And he talked about anaconda he saw underneath his canoe, and he said it was coiled up in a sort of S shape, Matthew Begess' shape, and he reckoned it was at least 50 feet, probably somewhat larger, and it was directly beneath his canoe. It was not something that he was trying to estimate the length of from a very long distance. It was quite underneath.
Yeah. Do you think it's the anaconda? Because out of all of these legendary giant snakes, the anaconda is the one that consistently dwarfs the others the regularity of large specimens being sighted, Richard. Do you think it's because of the environment that they are predominantly a water-based snake?
Yes, in exactly. Regard,
so they've got more buoyancy, so they can essentially keep growing as a crocodile does in a similar circumstance.
They give birth to live young. The female retains the eggs in her body, the eggs hatch, and the babies are born live. So they're like, you know, fully functioning miniature versions of the adult. So they spend almost all their time on water. They very rarely come out onto land. And these consistent reports of snakes in South America bigger, green anacondas bigger than Titanoboa, the prehistoric fossil snake. I went to look for giant anacondas in Guyana a few years back. Fortunately, when we went, it was one of the very, very few times we got financial backing from we got it from Capcom, the game company.
Yes.
They wanted to tie it in with their game Monster Hunter 2. So we had to go when they were releasing this game, which was in October, and it was in the middle of the worst drought. And our guide was a brilliant bloke called Damon Corry. He's a hereditary chief of the Arawak clan, the Eagle Clan Arawak in South America. Very well respected man. Unfortunately, the waters were so low, the drought was so bad, we couldn't get out into these remote areas where the giant anaconda was seen. But he told us that he was talking to some hunters who had seen one, and they said it was so big that they ran away in terror from it. Somehow how big it was, and they pointed to a dead palm tree, and I said there was a palm like that lying in the swamp on its side dead. This thing was crawling over it, and the head stretched over one end and the tail stretched over the other, and he said it would have made it at least 40 feet long, this snake.
Oh dear, no. Oh my goodness, Richard, these are incredible creatures. But like I say, we have so many examples of them, you know, of average size ones doing well. And these stories come from all around the world as well, you know. I mean, I've recently been rereading a couple of David Weatherly's books. And there are stories, you know, in places like Arizona and Nevada, Texas, where some of the old timers and the prospectors who were out in the middle of nowhere stumble across giant rattlesnakes, which, once again, why not?
Yes, particularly in times when they were less disturbed. You hear this again and again. I mean, the biggest venomous snake we know about is the king cobra.
Yes.
And there was one at London Zoo in the 30s that was 18 feet long.
Yeah.
But these venomous snakes, they don't reach the length of the bulk of the great constrictors. The interesting thing is that all snakes are venomous. Mm. All snakes are venomous. But most of them, the venom is so innocuous it doesn't harm human beings. Mm. But the big constrictors, they sort of co-opted the venom into the digestive system that helps it break down large prey items. In South America, they used to call the giant anaconda, the gauchos, the old cowboys in South America when they were herding the cattle through the swamps. They call the anaconda the manotoro, the bull killer, because they said it could constrict a full-grown bull or a horse and swallow it whole and digest it. In the same way that an average sized boa, you know, might gobble down a rat, this thing could take down.
Incredible. I mean, it is one of those most perplexing, because once again, Richard, it's one of those phenomenon that seems to span continents as well. It's from every continent where snakes are habitual. Obviously, Europe's probably the main one without any kind of large snake being relative. Whereas, you know, everywhere else seems to have a pretty large member of the family doing their best, as it were, for the snake world. So it's unusual once again that, regardless of conditions or the environment, we still stumble across these stories of gigantic snakes across the world.
Yeah, and they go right the way back. Mm-hmm. I mean, they talk in ancient Egypt. There was a translation of some hieroglyphs. It's about hunting an enormous snake, a huge snake that lived in a hole near a swamp. And that was about 45 feet long.
Mm.
And it was very, very, no mythology to it. It wasn't bigged up into some sort of god or something. It's about the hunting of this huge outsized snake that came out of this hole near a swamp.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, obviously you touched on it there, Richard, because I think the thing about king cobras is, I think a lot of people don't realise just how big they get. And as you say, venomous snakes generally don't get quite large in comparison to the constrictors and the python families. But the king cobra obviously is a fearsome creature. And I'm sure I've seen reports of people stumbling across 30-foot specimens of these creatures in India.
Now, I've never read about a giant king cobra. I'd be very interested to read it. But I mean, the only outsized specimens I've heard of are rattlesnakes.
Yeah, it breaks my mind, that one. I'll have to dig it out. If I dig it out, don't worry, I'll send you it. I'm sure I read a story about somebody stumbling across a cobra. And like I say, when you see a king cobra for the first time, and obviously they're cannibalistic, aren't they, Richard?
They feed almost, in the wild, they feed almost exclusively on other snakes. That's why they're called a king cobra. And they're not a true cobra either, despite the hood. They're in a little group of their own, separate from the true cobras. I mean, we were talking about these ancient Egyptians trying to capture this giant python in this whole story that was translated from the hieroglyphs. But in the late 1950s, there was sort of a modern-day equivalent of it.
Mm.
And Nick Redfern writes about this in one of his books. It's all about weird cases with the US government. And due to the political climate with the resurgence in communism in Latin America, the US government placed a CIA agent in Bolivia, and this guy was called Lee. And he was told by a cattle rancher that there was a giant snake living in this local cave, and it was over 33 feet long, and it would come out and occasionally kill people. It'd eaten 10 Indians, and it was supposed to have devoured cattle. And every 3 months or so, it would emerge, grab a cow or a person, and drag them into the river and kill them, and then return to his cave. And the rancher wanted Lee to capture the animal and take it to a zoo. And he discussed this with the embassy, and they came up with this idea to catch it. And the plan was to flush the monster out of its lair with tear gas and use this long sack, imagine like an elongate sleeping bag, complete with zip fasteners, held over the mouth of a cave, and there'd be two zip men, one at each end, and they'd smoke it out, it'd go into this sack, and they'd zip it up and then cart it to the zoo. But things went spectacularly wrong. The tear gas was shot into the cave, the anaconda came thrashing madly out of the cave into the sack. Once its entire length was inside, the zip men at both ends tried to zip it up, but it was so strong that its writhing split the sack and it got free. The animal came rushing at Lee, who whipped out his pistol, which was ironically a .357 Python, that was the name of the gun, and managed to shoot it through the head. And he said that the animal threw itself into a huge loop, smashing into a hardwood tree about as big as a telephone pole and shattering it to matchwood, and then fell back into the jungle, and they pumped more and more bullets into its head until it finally expired, and they measured it at 34 feet 3 inches. It was skinned and the hide took back to the United States, where he kept it in his garage, but its current whereabouts is are unknown.
Oh, not another one of those, Rich.
Yeah, current whereabouts are unknown. You always, you know, these great bits of evidence, and somehow they always slip through our fingers.
Yeah, well, if we can find the Shunka Warrican, because that turned up after being lost for decades, then never give up hope, Richard. That's the one thing we learn in this field.
Well, there's another group of reptiles that are supposed to have grown to fantastic sizes as well, and that's lizards.
Mm.
Now, we've mentioned him several times, but Charles Gould, the Victorian, it was an Australian Victorian naturalist, in his book Mythical Monsters, he inferred that there was an unknown species of gigantic monitor lizard with a venomous bite that could be behind some of the dragon legends.
Mm.
And he was proved right with the discovery of the Komodo dragon in Indonesia in the early part of the 20th century. I mean, these things get to about 10 foot. They've got this razor sharp teeth, venomous bite. They can take down water buffaloes. And they've eaten people. They have, they've gobbled up people on a number of occasions, including a rich German banker who wandered off from the tourist path, ended up getting eaten. There's another story of a guy who actually went jogging on Komodo. He went jogging through the walls of Komodo. Why would anybody be so bloody stupid? But all they found off him was a trainer. They found one of his trainers and that was it. That'd be out of it. But the Komodo dragon had a much bigger relative on mainland Australia called Megalania prisca that lived in the Pleistocene epoch. Mm. And it's only known from fragmentary remains, but they've estimated it to be between anywhere from 15 to 30 feet long. And it was very much like a scaled-up Komodo dragon, and it almost certainly had a venomous bite like the Komodo dragon, and it preyed on the megafauna that used to live in Australia, like Diprotodon, the giant hippopotamus-sized wombat, and Procoptodon, the giant kangaroo, and Nototherium, weird marsupial rhinoceros, and all these things. And this is the largest land-based predator.
Hmm.
And it's supposed to have died out, you know, anywhere between 100,000 and 10,000 years ago. But Professor Ralph Molnar, an American paleontologist, said he's seen Megalania hip bones, part of an ilium, that looked as if they were no more than 200 years old. Whether they were or not is a different thing.
Mm.
But we do get reports of these giant lizards. And the Aborigines, in their legends, talk about this thing called Mungungali, the Goanna Bunyip. Goanna is an Australian name for the monitor lizard.
Mm.
There are lots of different types of monitor lizard in Australia. And they believe it picked up sandstorms with its tail. But there are reports of giant lizards from around Australia and New Guinea.
Mm.
And one of the first took place in 1890 near the village of Aurora in Victoria. A 30-foot lizard was supposed to have been seen coming out of the bush, causing panic and leaving a trail of these king-sized footprints. And a posse of 40 men with guns and nets set out with cattle dogs to try and trap it.
Hmm.
But it vanished back into the scrub to be seen no more. But they're not confined to these old reports. In 1961, three loggers encountered one of these things. They were in a remote part of the Wauchop Forest in New South Wales.
Hmm.
And they'd marked some trees for felling, and then they sat down to brew tea in a previously cleared area. And they heard a crunching of something large approaching them, and looking up, they saw this titanic lizard bearing down on them from an embankment. and are fleeing in terror. They locked themselves in their truck and watched as the lizard stalked across the dirt track, and they agreed its length was 30 feet and it held its body 3 feet above the ground. And in 1984, a guy called Peter Sleeman was walking through this forest. And as he walked through the bush, he heard footsteps following him. And, you know, a remote area, he was wondering who it was. So he sidetracked through a natural pathway to a small clearing, and he hid himself and waited for his stalker to emerge. To his horror, he thought it wasn't a person, but a huge monitor lizard that lumbered around the corner. And it resembled the lace monitor, which is one of the more common monitor species in Australia, except for its huge size. The lace monitor is about has a head about 6 inches long, and he said this was four times that length. So the creature's head was four times the length of a lace monitor. So it held its body about 3 feet from the ground, and he only observed the head and front portion of and front legs and front portion of the body. He didn't see the whole animal because it just partially came into this clearing. He saw it shooting its forked tongue out, and he thought it was hunting him because these things, you know, track things down with scent by the tongue. And luckily, his hiding place was good because it went on its way. But Sleeman never ever returned to the area, and he reckoned it was about 20 to 26 feet long. And he passed this story on to the brother of Gary Opitz. Yeah, Gary Opitz. I think he's been on the show, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a respected Australian zoologist with many years of experience, and Gary explored the area but couldn't find any trace of it. But Gary himself told that story to me. And he investigated another story. Of a sighting of a woman near Brunswick Heights at the mouth of the Brunswick River, and she saw a lizard sprawled across a road on Fingal Street, and it covered the entire width, about 20 feet of the road, and it rose up and walked off into the bush. And there's another story like that of a guy driving a school bus. And he saw one of these huge lizards lying across the road and taking up the whole of the road, and it was 20 feet plus. This animal was 20 feet plus. And the Aborigines still see them too. In 1940, an Aboriginal family camp made their camp close to these catacombs near the Nullarbor Plain, and they slept outside of their truck and off the road. And one of the children wandered off at sunset, and despite a frantic search, they couldn't find him. The next morning, I found a trail of huge lizard prints and the mark of a long tail that were leading into one of these caves, and they thought that the Mungundali had grabbed this child, but they never found the body. They didn't linger. They just drove off. In the same region, 1973, two men were driving a Jeep late one night, and the headlights illuminated this immense lizard that they said was 6 feet high and twice the length of their Jeep, and they said it had leathery grey skin that reminded them of an elephant. And the things are really tough, because there's a story from the Margaret River near the Kimberley region of northeastern Australia from 1982 about a stockman mustering his cattle when, in his amazement, he saw a 20-foot lizard stalking one of the cattle through the long grass. He said he raised his rifle and fired two rounds at the creature from 150 feet, and it seemed totally unharmed and just wandered away into the bush.
I mean, the thing with these sightings, Australia, I've read a few of them, Richard, there are only two conclusions to draw from most of these eyewitness accounts. They're either making the whole thing up, or it happened, because there's nothing it could potentially be a mistake for. This is the thing about Australia, you know, it doesn't have big animals, you know, so anything that's unusual, which is, you know, why a lot of people obviously are aware of the Yowie, you know, the largest creature domestically is the kangaroo. And I know a male roo can get to a fair size, and so can a cassowary, but these are not what we're could be even in the realms of mistaken identity, are they?
No. Now, some people say, oh, this is all down to Rex Gilroy and he can't be trusted. But not all of these stories come from Rex Gilroy.
Mm.
Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. Yeah. Gary Opitz's story, for example, nothing to do with Rex Gilroy.
Mm.
And these older stories, nothing to do with Rex Gilroy. And if you move to the island of New Guinea, where nothing would surprise, because it's one of the most unexplored regions of the world, you find very similar stories. Australia's not got the monopoly on giant lizards. In the Second World War, Japanese soldiers caught glimpses of what they described as tree-climbing crocodiles deep in the Papuan jungle. And then in the summer of 1960, a panic broke out on the island, and rumours began that people had been killed by what they said were 20-foot-long dragons, and the monsters were said to breathe fire and drink blood. Well, a lot of people speculated that the fire is the flickering tongue of these huge lizards. Scare became so bad that government authorities moved the people into the areas that were affected into stockades and offered substantial rewards for one of the captures of these beasts. But the rewards went unclaimed, and the creatures disappeared back into the jungle. Also in 1960, Lindsay Green and Fred Clutcham, two administration agricultural officers, found some skin and the jawbone of one of these huge creatures near a village called Karayuku. But today, they would have been able to do DNA analysis on them. But back then, there was, you know, it didn't even exist. And they found cave paintings of these things as well. David M. Davis, an explorer, was shown Papum cave paintings of one of these giant lizards standing upon its hind legs. And some people have suggested that stories of people encountering flesh-eating dinosaurs are actually these huge monitor lizards, because they can rear up onto their hind legs.
Yep. I mean, there are stories like this from America as well. You know, once again, there are numerous, and people describe them as dinosaurs, but I've often suspected that their perception is perhaps tethered to modern interpretation, and what they're actually seeing is a giant lizard.
I mean, there is a giant lizard on New Guinea. It's called the Salvadori dragon, or sometimes called the crocodile monitor, and it's longer than the Komodo dragon. It grows to 15 feet.
Yeah.
The Komodo dragon grows to 10 feet. It's not bulky. It's not as bulky. It's more serpentine in its form, so it's as heavy as the Komodo dragon. But it could be that there are fantastically big specimens of this creature. They call it a trellia in some areas. A guy called Robert Grant and another guy called David George were exploring the Strachan Islands district in 1961. They encountered a grey-skinned lizard some 26 feet long. And they said its neck alone measured 3 feet. More recently, 1999, two groups of people spotted a dinosaur-like creature near Lake Murray near Barocco. It was 20 feet long with crocodile-like skin and had thick hind legs and smaller fins and a long tail. As recently as 2004 in New Britain, which is a big island off the coast of New Guinea, another giant lizard was reported, and people called it a dinosaur. They said it was over 20 feet long, able to rear up 10 feet tall and as thick as a 900-litre water tank. And it came out of a marsh near the provincial capital of Kokopo, and it's said to have killed and eaten three dogs, and the locals thought it was a dinosaur, and obviously it's one of these giant lizards. Police armed with M16s and shotguns searched the area, but they found no trace of it. So these reports of dinosaurs, I think, are giant monitor lizards. Now, in New Guinea, some people have suggested this is a surviving megalania, but I think it's more likely to be fantastically big individuals of the Salvadori dragon or crocodile monitor. We know it gets to 15 feet, so freak individuals might get to 20, 25, even 30 feet.
Mm. Mm. Well, absolutely. We see countless examples of environmental conditions creating freak sizes. So why not?
Why not? And as I said before, nothing would surprise me in New Guinea. There are consistent reports of phylofines from New Guinea. Mm. They call them Dobsonga. The old Tasmanian wolf, they call it Dobsonga up there.
Yeah.
They say it's this creature that looks like a dog, has a stiff tail, stripes down the back, comes down from the mountains and kills livestock. They won't hunt it because it's taboo. Mm. Perfect description of a phylofine.
So, certainly sounds like it to me, Richard.
Undiscovered tribes. All sorts of stuff going on there. Giant crocodiles, again, in New Guinea.
Yeah.
We've gone full circle to giant crocodiles. There's, along the Sepik River, along the Sepik River, there's a monster crocodile that is venerated by this tribe. And they say, they believe it's their guardian, and it looks after them. And it's probably is driving other smaller crocodiles out of the lagoon where their territory is. And James Buchanan, the wildlife cameraman, he did a series called Predators and Me when he went to try and film it. He didn't see the creature itself, but he saw these drag marks where it had gone into the water. And that is reckoned to be at least 30 feet long.
Mm.
So all these huge beasts out there. And one of the things I'd love to do, if I had the money or the backing, would be to go to these places and chase up these stories of giant crocodiles and try and get them on film with some kind of measurable frame of reference. Mm. This whacking great monster in New Guinea and the tribe that worship it. It's like Boy's Own Adventure, H. Rider Haggard stuff. It makes a great documentary. And there's the man-eater Potol and terrorising the floating towns in Agusan Marsh, and then the legendary Gustav.
Mm.
And there's this other one called Mysore, which means darkness, which is in Orissa in northern northeast India.
Mm.
Another one of these giant individuals. You could make a whole series going around looking for these huge crocs, and it would be great. But,
absolutely. There'd be monsters and well within the realms of exploration, Richard.
Yeah, it's not like you're looking for something you know that no one knows if it exists or not. You know, there might be Bigfoot, there might not be Bigfoot. Nobody knows for sure.
Mm.
Well, this thing, we know they exist. We know they get huge. Let's try and go and get some of them on film with frames of reference. It would be an amazing thing to do.
Mm.
But television has become so bland and timid and obsessed with political correctness.
Yeah.
I think unless I get a lot of money, it's not going to get...
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fantastic idea for a series, Richard, and one I would thoroughly enjoy. So, in regards to the world of giant animals, I think it is one of those aspects where we have stumbled across numerous reports across all the creatures we've discussed, you know, as long as there's been the written word, Richard, and it's incredible that we still get them. And yet, even when we do discover extremely large examples of such creatures, people seem to think, well, that's simply the end of it. But the potential is incredible.
Mm. There's a skull of a man-eating crocodile in northeast Australia that came from a specimen at least 23 feet long.
Mm.
It was measured, and we've got the skull, and we know the formula for length of skull to body ratio, and this thing was around 23 feet.
Yeah.
So if you can reach 23 feet, why stop there?
Yeah, absolutely. 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 Anything can happen. So, Richard, thank you for your time today. It's been fantastic. It's given me the chills a couple of times. But it's been fantastic, and thank you as always for your knowledge and your wisdom on these subjects. Where can everybody keep up to date with you, and what else have you got planned, hopefully, for when the lockdown's done?
Oh, well, the Centre 14 Zoology that I work for, the cryptozoological organisation I work for, they have a website, which is www.cfz.org.uk. My latest book, Adventures in Cryptozoology, Volume 1, the first part of a two-volume set, that's out now, and you can get it off Amazon. My own personal email is richard@cfz.org.uk. If anybody wants to get in touch, or anybody knows anywhere where I could get some form of sponsorship, I did try writing to lacrosse. You know, there's a sports equipment. Yeah. They've got the crocodile as their logo, but I never heard a thing back from them. But, you know, if some company wanted to sponsor me going looking for giant crocodiles, I would wear their logo and the whole nine yards. It would be fantastic.
Well, let's hope that. Mine,
yeah, I was going to go back to Tajikistan this year looking for evidence of the Caspian tiger, survival of the Caspian tiger, and also looking into reports of relic hominins. But whether that happens or not, it's still up in the air. But yeah, giant crocodiles, you know, give me the funding and away I'll go.
Yeah, fingers crossed, my friend, fingers crossed. Well, listen, Richard, thank you as always. It's lovely to speak to you. Glad to hear you're safe and well down there. And you keep looking after yourself, and we will speak again, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.